A Tempo is a production of the Classical Network and is made possible by the support of listeners like you. Thank you for your support. Welcome to A Tempo, the Classical Network spotlight on the arts and culture. I'm Rachel Katz, and I'm your host as we explore the changes at work in the performing arts. Each week, I'll bring you some of the latest news and also take time to examine many of the issues that are challenging arts organizations. Today, we'll check in on Carnegie Hall's festival devoted to the musical and cultural heritage of the 60s. Among the film presentations, lectures, and performances looking at this era of change is one upcoming concert that will explore protest songs from the 60s and feature songs written by participants in some of the Weill Music Institute programs, including New York students and prisoners at the Sing Sing Correctional Facility. I'll speak with two of the student songwriters, one of their choir directors, and Aaron Siegel, Assistant Director of the Weill Music Institute's Learning and Engagement Programs. As part of A Tempo, we're pleased to bring you some of the news from around the world of the performing arts. The American Ballet Theatre and Duke University have announced a new partnership that will bring performances and workshops to the university students. According to the American Ballet Theatre statement, the agreement will begin in January 2019 and include 5 performances in March 2020 of Giselle at the Durham Performing Arts Center, the ABT's first performance in North Carolina since 1969. The partnership also includes a 2-week residency for the ABT Studio Company each year for 3 years that will offer public performances, master classes, and other activities with students and the community at large. Students in the university's dance program will also receive master classes from instructors of the ABT Jacqueline Kennedy Onassis School. Conductor Jesus Lopez Cobos, who served for 15 years as music director of the Cincinnati Symphony Orchestra, has died at the age of 78. According to the conductor's website, he was scheduled to conduct performances of Aida at the Vienna State Opera later this spring. Lopez Cobos graduated with a degree in philosophy from the University of Madrid, where he conducted the choir without previous formal musical training. He went on to train with Franco Ferrara and Hans Swarovski before winning first prize in the Besançon competition. In addition to his post in Cincinnati, his career also included time as music director of Madrid's Teatro Real, the Deutsche Oper Berlin, and Lausanne Chamber Orchestra. The Cincinnati Inquirer reported that the Cincinnati Symphony will observe a moment of silence for its former music director before performances this weekend and will dedicate its concerts on March 23rd and 24th in his memory. This week also saw the passing of Harvey Schmidt, the composer behind the longest-running musical in history. According to Playbill, Schmidt worked with lyricist and book writer Tom Jones on The Fantastics, including its iconic song, Try to Remember. The Fantastics opened at the Sullivan Street Playhouse in 1960 and closed in 2002, which Playbill said was the longest continuous run of any show in America. A later revival lasted from 2006 to 2017. Schmidt was 88. Those are just some of the headlines this week from around the arts world. Music was at the forefront of the social and political protest movements of the 1960s and is one of the focuses of this year's Carnegie Hall Festival devoted to this era. Titled The 60s, The Years That Changed America, the festival began in January and wraps up March 24th, filled with film presentations, concerts, and lectures that explore issues of civil rights and cultural change, and the role that music and artists played. One upcoming concert, scheduled for March 11th, will highlight the tradition of protest songs and how they are still sounding calls for change amid today's conversations of equality and social justice. Titled A Time Like This, Music for Change, the March 11th concert at Carnegie Hall will feature Broadway, hip-hop, and other performers, including Carrie Campari of The Color Purple, Rhiannon Giddens, and Young Paris, joining together with New York City school choirs and others to perform both songs from the 60s and also some contemporary works written by participants in programs run by Carnegie Hall's Weill Music Institute. Among the songwriters are mothers-to-be who crafted lullabies for their children, high school students, and prisoners at the Sing Sing Correctional Facility. The songs touch on issues including civil rights, social justice, and the Black Lives Matter movement. I had the chance to speak with two of the student songwriters, as well as Aaron Siegel, Assistant Director of Learning and Engagement Programs at the Weill Music Institute. Siegel said the concert reflects the collaborative efforts of a diverse range of people and artists.
We're excited because of the ways in which this concert has brought together lots of different voices, and the community of teachers and students who are involved in our programs and involved in the Carnegie Hall community are really important. And so we take very seriously the kinds of ideas and musics that high schoolers and choirs and young people are making. And so we're really excited about honoring Jamie and Wadley's vision for this song.
How many schools and groups were asked to participate in this program on the school side of things?
On the school side of things, we extended the invitation to the 104 teachers who are involved in our music educators workshop. So that's 104 K through 12 teachers throughout the city.
And what type of response did you get back?
I can't remember the exact number. I know that we received overall around 66 submissions, and that's from across the city, including the music teachers. And I think the music educators workshop ended up submitting somewhere around 15 to 20 songs among that group.
What was the range of topics and thoughts and subject matter that these dealt with?
It's really fascinating because I think when you look at it, you see a real strong reflection of the kinds of ideas and social movements and struggles and resistance movements that are happening across the country right now. So in addition to topics that Jamie has brought up around racism and around taking youth seriously, there's also things around immigration, and there are songs about the environment. There's songs that are about people just taking a stand, right? Just being strong as young people and believing in their own voices. So I would say that it's kind of in a range like that.
Yeah, you mentioned these were sent out to teachers who were involved in the workshop programs. What were the music education programs? What type of guidelines were sent out, and were there any other additional materials that were provided to give broader context on what this festival was going to be like?
So I would say there's two parts of that. We spent some time during one of our first workshops with the music educators, diving into some of the musics of the 60s that we felt like were going to raise some of these big questions. So we looked a little bit at Richie Havens' performance at Woodstock. He has a famous performance where he performed the solo version of a song called Freedom, which also morphed into a version of the standard spiritual A Motherless Child. And we talked a little bit as a group of teachers about the power of musicians to communicate ideas, and how the 60s was one of the first times when that really became much more clear, and musicians and artists in general took up the banner of a lot of political causes in very robust ways. And we've kind of backed up from there and invited teachers to sing with some music that the young people in our FMP program, which is our teacher music project, which is after-school program for high school students here at Carnegie. And they had written a song that we invited the teachers into singing, just to have the experience of what it feels like to participate in a new song in relation to this project and some of the themes that we've been exploring. Mm-hmm. So with that kind of initial experience in mind, we also provided teachers with resources that were available through some partner sites. There are some, the Apollo Theater, the John F. Kennedy Foundation, the Robert F. Kennedy Foundation. A lot of sites have curriculums that are around the power and the ideas of the 60s. And we also provided a list of about 60 songs from the 60s that we felt like spoke to some of the themes that we were trying to address in this event. So it's kind of providing a lot of resources and context for teachers to think about the best ways to bring these ideas up with their students.
The other portion of this project was also done in connection with projects in some of the correctional facilities. How was that portion similar, and how did it differ from the student side of it?
In addition to the schools, there's a handful of other sites, and not just the prison sites, that that we were involved with. And I think the idea that the Wild Music Institute every year works with programs in a handful of settings across the city, and there's something like 25 programs that we do across the city. And so we really engage all of those programs in trying to figure out where the people wanted to create new songs. So we worked with elementary school teachers who are involved in our Musical Explorers program for elementary school students. We worked with the Future Music Project, which is the high school age students who are coming after school to do things like concert production and songwriting, and who also participate in the FMP Ensemble, which is a group of, it's an audition-based ensemble for sort of top-performing musicians throughout the city. We also worked with our Lullaby Project, which is a project that helps mothers create lullabies for their soon-to-be-born children. And then we worked in the Musical Connections programs, and those are the programs at Sing Sing, and then also there's some programs at New York area non-secure settings for high school students who are court-involved. So there's a lot of different settings, and each of those settings provided at least one song for the event. And a lot of the preparation was the same, so we engaged people in some initial activities and then also provided resources to them.
And what are you hoping that the audience and the participants walk away with?
You know, this is the Wild Music Institute's contribution to the Carnegie Hall 60s Festival. And in the course of creating that festival, there's a lot of energy spent thinking about the impact of the music of the 60s, the artists, the politics of that time. And the Wild Music Institute is in a position where we can really speak to New Yorkers of all ages and their responses to the ideas of today that are still relevant from the 60s. So what I think we would be looking for people to take away is a strong sense of the voices of New Yorkers today who have a lot to say about how music can help to impact some of the social movements of our time.
That was Aaron Siegel, Assistant Director of Learning and Engagement Programs at Carnegie Hall's Wild Music Institute. Kim Walton is director of the Wadley High School Choir, which will perform the song Break the Chains by sophomore Jamie Harrison Jones. You heard an excerpt of that song earlier. I spoke with them about how the project was presented in class and what inspired Jamie to write the song.
I had a few different groups of students come see me, and so we worked at lunch and after school and different times to kind of work on fleshing out what the lyrics would be and then what the music might be. And at the end, we had one song that was really good, so that is the one that we ended up submitting.
Then, Jamie, when you heard this assignment, what were your first thoughts?
Oh, I thought this was great. Like, this would be, like, a great opportunity for me, you know, to showcase my talent, because I do songwriting, and Ms. Wilson has helped me, like, dramatically. And so I just wanted to get it done.
From where did you get your inspiration? What was it that just all came together for this project?
Inspiration. All right. I don't know. But I know it came to me in a dream. That's one thing that I know. It came to me in a dream. And when I gave it to Ms. Wilson, it's like all over the place. And that's how most of my music is. And she helped me like dish out the bad parts and dish out the good parts and like put it together, you know, the chorus, the verses, the bridge. And then she did the music. So that's where it came all together.
And Kim, what were your thoughts when she first brought the work to you?
I thought it was amazing. I thought her lyrics were really intelligent, and she knew in her head exactly how she wanted it to go, what she wanted the soloist to do, what she wanted the spoken word to do, and what she wanted the choir to do. She was very clear in her mind, and she would sing pieces to me, and we would notate it down, and there was a lot of back and forth, and we worked together just to get it in a form. That was really the only thing that was missing, but she had all the pieces there. And so I was really proud of her creativity and kind of her attention to detail and sort of seriousness with which she took this project.
Now, Jamie, you said it came to you in a dream. What were some of the challenges that you worked through, you know, personally in dealing with a topic like this?
So being a young female, an African-American female, I see a lot of stuff in my community because I live in Brooklyn, you know, East New York. I see Stop and Frisk, and then I used to listen to the stories about my grandmother and how she was, her mother was like a slave and whatever. And, I just felt like really strongly about the topic that I was writing about. And I think that's why it came out the way it did.
Looking at the broader context that this song was written in, what are your thoughts about how it's going to be performed and the type of concert that it will be included in?
I'm excited. It's Carnegie Hall. Like, it's Carnegie Hall. Like, this is a wonderful opportunity.
And Kim, how did the chorus as a whole respond? What were some of the reactions you got from the different students that were participating?
I think the kids were surprised that one of our own could write something that came together this well. And I think that once they kind of heard it and Jamie shared with them her ideas about it and how it should go and who should sing what, I think they're really excited and I think they really like it. And they're also excited for this performance on March 11th.
Have there been opportunities to hear about some of the other works, or at least maybe through some of the rehearsals? And what have the dynamics been like?
We have not heard any of the other works. We have been studying a couple of them that we are assigned to sing in class. But other than those three pieces, or two pieces plus Jamie's piece, we don't know what else on the program. So we're kind of anticipating hearing some other really great new music.
And what are your thoughts about a program like this, given the social context that we're in, that we're living day to day? What do you hope comes out of an event like this?
Oh, can I answer this? Oh, yeah. The awareness that, like, slavery is still here, not in the sense of back in the day and, oh, yeah, discrimination, not in the sense of back in the day and, like, old times, but, like, TV and social media and how you should act and shouldn't act. Like, I just want to bring awareness to my kind, not my kind, but my youth.
And, Kim, what do you think the students overall have drawn from this?
Well, I think they can very much relate to the subjects that Jamie is singing about. I think that they see these issues almost every day in their life, whether it's in their neighborhoods or on the news or just all around. You know, there's so much happening, and I think it's this whole concert, the theme of this concert is very pertinent to the time that we're in right now, hence the title, A Time Like This. But I think that it matters, and I think it matters to our students very much. I think that they believe that this is relevant.
And have there been any discussions about the musical side of this and how music can be used to convey these ideas and move ideas like this and social movements forward?
Yeah, this whole thing was set up by Carnegie to come out of music, or come out of a time like the 1960s where music was used as activism and music was used for social protests, and music was used to send a message in some sort of political context. And so that's how we set it up in class, other than we set it up for, instead of the 1960s, we set it up for today. What would you be writing about today? What issues are important to be discussed and for people to heard and be made aware of today?
And Jamie, what do you hope people will, or how do you hope people will take your piece and listen to it? What do you hope they'll get out of it?
That all goes back to why I wrote it. The first verse is about slavery and back in the day, and, you know, the shackles too big and break the chains. And the second verse was about the youth, like my day, old and young, you know, Stop and Frisk and stuff like that. So it all ties into that. I just want to bring awareness. That's it. No, I'm just super excited for the performance.
That was my conversation with Wadley High School Choir Director Kim Watson and sophomore Jamie Harrison-Jones, whose song Break the Chains will be performed as part of Carnegie Hall's Music for Change concert. Emma Thompson Hay is a senior at Eleanor Roosevelt High School, and she will perform her song, Afro-Americana, on guitar for the concert. She said she first wrote the song as part of an assignment for a guitar class.
We had to write a social justice song for my school guitar class. So that's what I wrote it for. And then my guitar teacher actually entered me into the whole Carnegie Hall thing, which is how I found out about it.
What was your first reaction to the concept of what Carnegie Hall was doing? And then how did you feel when your song actually was accepted?
When I heard about the whole, the time, this concert, I just thought that it was really cool. I love music from the 60s, I always have. And I thought it was super cool that I could, add one of my songs to the mix, even though it's not from the 60s, it kind of has similar vibes. I thought that was super cool. And then when I found out that my song actually got picked, I was like, oh my gosh, that's crazy, because I honestly didn't think it would. And there are so many people who are so talented sending in their music to be looked at for the concert. And when I found out that my song was picked, it was just a really cool moment for me. I was really happy.
Well, what went into writing the song? What emotions, what thoughts, what inspiration?
Well, when I started writing the song, I knew that I wanted to talk about the Black Lives Matter movement and discrimination and marginalization within the Black, or toward the Black community, I guess. So I know I wanted to discuss that. And then when I actually started writing it, I kind of just channeled all of my energy and all of my feelings and thoughts toward that and kind of put it into music. And that's kind of how I wrote the song, I guess.
Did you have an audience in mind when you wrote it? Who are you trying to reach?
I don't really have a specific audience. Pretty much just anyone that would listen, I guess. I don't know. There's a line in the song where I say, "Don't say that you're blind to the colors you see. You know we are different, you and me." So I guess you could interpret that as I was trying to kind of reach people who don't see color, or say they don't see color, and kind of want to pretend that racism and things don't exist. But really, I just kind of wrote it for anyone that would listen, any audience that would take it in.
Well, I see from one of the videos that was posted, you've had at least one or possibly several performances already. What types of reactions did you receive from the audience?
It was all really good reactions. Everyone was just super warm and supportive and just really nice about it. So yeah, that was really cool.
And what are you hoping that people do take away when they've heard the song?
I hope that people take away that saying I don't see color, it doesn't solve any issue. It kind of just pushes it to the side, which is not what needs to happen at all. And instead of saying, "I don't see color, I don't see race," it's better to say, "I see those things. I see that we're different, and that's okay. And we can both coexist happily and peacefully without, discrimination and racism and stuff like that." So, yeah.
And in doing this project and looking forward to the performance coming up, has it given you new thoughts or new ideas on the way that music can serve to be part of the social conversation?
Oh my gosh, for sure. Definitely. Definitely. Listening to 60s music in more of a, revolutionary type of light, and seeing how that music was used to spark a revolution and to spark this whole, an entire movement, is just really cool now, especially after, being involved in something a time like this. It kind of makes you think about music in a more change-making light, which is awesome.
What are your own aspirations for your music? Are you looking to do it as a career?
I'm actually not. I mean, I would love, it's my biggest hobby, and I love music, obviously, so much. So I always want to keep it in my life, but I don't think that I'm looking to pursue a career in it or anything. But I'd always love to have it with me, and I'd love to keep performing and writing songs and stuff like that forever. So, yeah.
And do you think this experience is kind of changing or affecting the way that you look at your own music going forward?
Oh my God. Yeah, definitely. For sure. I never thought, when I wrote the song, it was kind of just for a guitar project. And when I performed it, and I was okay, that's it. It's over, whatever. And I guess being able to enter it into a competition like this and be performing it at Carnegie Hall, it kind of just makes you think about like how far you can go if you just believe in yourself, which is definitely something that I didn't really know before and didn't really think about before.
What types of songs have you written in the past? Or was this kind of the first real complete work you've done?
Yeah, this is definitely the first song that I've really written, like that I've written from start to finish. Yeah, I haven't really written any songs before this one.
In writing it and putting the lyrics together and, you know, certainly coming, yeah, especially from personal experience, did that help you or did that enable you in some way to see the situation differently, see it more clearly, see it in a, from a different perspective? How did that kind of change your relationship to the to these issues?
I think in writing a song, it kind of forces you to like confront your own thoughts and like your own opinions about a situation and not just take in things that you've read or that you've seen on TV. You know, it kind of like forces you to think about your like your inner thoughts and what you want to say. So I think that writing the song has helped me like figure those thoughts out a little bit more, and like they became a lot clearer in my head about what I want to do, like the type of activism that I hope to lead. And yeah, so it definitely helped me to understand what I wanted to say and how I wanted to say it and what I wanted to do about the situation. I'm just so happy to be performing at Carnegie Hall. I'm so excited.
That was student and songwriter Emma Thompson Hay. You can see a video of her talking about her work on the Autempo page of our website at wwfm.org. A time like this, Music for Change will be held at Carnegie Hall Sunday, March 11th. More information on the concert and other festival events can be found at carnegiehall.org.
First grade teacher says everyone is equal, but how do you explain all the pain, yet it's legal? She says don't judge, people are the same on the inside. Got a little older, realize they just don't know. How could they? Mom and dad had just walked past the ghettos. It's the hate we create, just the fate of our day and our yesterday. Don't say that you're blind to the colors you see. You know we are different, you and me. The world is your oyster and life is your drug. When I say that mine matters, you just shrug.
I hope you enjoy the conversations focusing on the changing dynamics and challenges in the arts world that I bring you each week on Autempo. But remember that programs like this are made possible only through your support of this station. To become a member of the Classical Network, go to wwfm.org and click on Donate. Thank you for being a member of the global listening community that is the Classical Network. Thank you for listening to Autempo. I'm your host and producer, Rachel Katz. Join me again next week as we explore more issues and trends in the world of the performing arts. You can listen to past programs of Autempo by going to our arts and cultural news page at wwfm.org or searching for Autempo on our program page. Autempo is a production of the Classical Network and is made possible by the support of listeners like you.